This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. The Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces is urging its U.S. allies to assume their, quote, moral obligations to protect them from a cross-border Turkish offensive now in its fourth day. The SDF were the main ground partner in the protracted U.S.-led campaign against the Islamic State group in Syria, losing 11,000 fighters. The Turkish offensive began after U.S. President Donald Trump ordered U.S. troops to pull back from the border. But Trump has since toughened his policy towards Ankara and on Friday threatened crippling sanctions if the operation goes too far. In Egypt, the Arab League condemned what it described as Turkey's aggression against Syria and warned that Ankara will be responsible for the spread of terrorism following its invasion. President Trump says the United States and China have agreed to the first phase of a trade deal that would end a trade war that has been going on for months. In announcing the deal, President Trump said the U.S. relationship with China has never been better.
I think they're great. I think the relationship in certain ways may be better than it's ever been. We've been through a very tough negotiation. There's never been a negotiation like this.
The deal averts a 5% increase on $250 billion worth of Chinese goods set to go into effect on Tuesday. At a Saturday summit, Chinese leader Xi Jinping and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi agreed to set up a high-level group to tackle India's large trade deficit with China. Xi and Modi held nearly 6 hours of talks in their second annual summit designed to break through decades of distrust. British and European Union negotiators are working through the weekend to see if they can agree on a Brexit deal in time for next week's summit of EU leaders. The main stumbling block remains the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland, Britain's only land border with the EU. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. The former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, told House committees leading the impeachment inquiry into President Trump that the president pressured his State Department to remove her from her post. AP's Tim McGuire has more.
Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, in her opening statement obtained by the AP, said she was told in May to leave Ukraine on the next plane. She was later told President Trump had been pressuring the State Department for months to remove her. She testified in private for more than 9 hours Friday. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
She has been a model diplomat and deserved better than the shabby treatment she received.
Ohio Republican Jim Jordan questioned the secrecy surrounding the testimony and the whistleblower who touched off the inquiry.
We're talking about the President of the United States, an impeachment process 13 months before an election. Why don't we know who this whistleblower is?
At least four more administration figures are slated to appear before the committee next week. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Meanwhile, the New York Times is reporting the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, is being investigated by federal prosecutors in New York for possible lobbying violations. AP's Mike Grassi reports.
Ukraine, which is central to the ongoing impeachment probe by House Democrats, is now at the center of an investigation of Rudy Giuliani, President Donald Trump's personal attorney. According to the New York Times, federal prosecutors in New York are investigating Giuliani for possible lobbying violations. One of two anonymous sources tells the Times prosecutors are investigating Giuliani's work to undermine Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. On Friday, Yovanovitch testified for 9 hours behind closed doors before House impeachment investigators. Mike Gracia, Washington.
There's some encouraging news in the battle against the California wildfires. AP Shelley Adler reports.
The winds are down and so are the temperatures, so progress is being made. The smoky Los Angeles wildfire that damaged or destroyed more than 30 structures is 19% contained early Saturday. Thousands of people remained under evacuation orders, though. To the east, a blaze that ripped through a Riverside County mobile home park is 25% contained. And in Northern California, the lights are back on for 98% of customers who lost power when PG&E switched it off in an effort to prevent the fires. I'm Shelley Antler.
Hong Kong pro-democracy demonstrations Saturday were smaller and less disruptive than recent massive rallies that shut down much of the city. The largest event on Saturday was a march that included thousands of protesters in the shopping district, across from the business and financial centers on Hong Kong Island. Riot police nearby took no action during the afternoon-long march. For more news, you can always visit us at voanews.com. And for news on the go, download the VOA mobile app. In Washington, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Allegations that there is instability within the ruling coalition are unfounded, malicious, and baseless. There is no instability within the ruling coalition. The coalition is as solid as it could be.
In the Kingdom of Lesotho, Prime Minister Thomas Thabane reshuffles cabinet.
The king and the government can say that you know, we have money on one hand, and yet you find that the king is spending so many millions of Mbalang. And we are not saying money should not be spent, but there should be an understanding that priorities must be set, and there should be correct priorities for the country.
Public sector workers say they will continue with their demands for improved living conditions in the southern African kingdom of Eswatini.
We encourage Tanzania to relook at this statement because people who sought asylum need durable solutions. And it is the cornerstone, it is the principle of each country. It is expected that each country should offer solutions to people who have sought asylum.
And a refugee coordinator expresses concern about Tanzanian President John Magufuli's call on Burundian refugees to return home. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Political party campaigns are scheduled to end Saturday ahead of next week's general election. In the presidential contest, incumbent President Philippe Nyusi from the governing Frelimo faces Osofo Momade from the main opposition party, RENAMO. Analysts say it is unlikely that the opposition candidates can derail the incumbent president's five-year re-election bid. Meanwhile, the African Union has deployed its poll observer mission to monitor the elections in Mozambique. For the latest development, viewers, Portuguese to Africa reporter Amancio Villanculos joins us live via telephone. Leica from Beira. How are you, Amancio, in Beira?
I'm fine, Peter. Thank you very much for getting in touch with me to update our audience on these elections in Mozambique. As you said, this is the last day of the campaign, and for the surprise of many people here in Beira, the incumbent president, Philippe Nyusi, just arrived to this city to close his campaign, but also here that he'll be heading to Nampula in northern Mozambique, meaning that he can be in three seats at the same time. And that, Peter, shows the difference between the candidates. While the ruling party has all the money that they can use to fly to three different cities in one day, opposition is struggling to get the funding for its campaign.
So talk to me about the campaigns. How are people reacting to them? Because analysts are saying that it appears that incumbent President Philippe Nyusi could win easily for his re-election campaign.
Well, while we understand that analysts are saying that the incumbent can easily win, that's according to, or at least that's to the fact that RENAMO does not have the strong leader that Gacama used to be. But that's just an analysis which is sometimes not based on any election poll. Mozambique does not realize or do any poll, so it's based on people's opinion. So it's really very difficult to assess at this time that President Nyusi will have an easy re-election. I was in Nyamatanda, which is a district around here, close to the city of Beira, and I saw many people supporting the opposition MDM, which is run by Mr. Davos Mbepu Simango, and also there are lots of supporters for RENAMO. So it can't be that easily, as some people say. Just to remind you, Peter, in previous elections, Frelimo never won with over a difference of 15%, for example. So this time, it's not like since Gacama is no longer there, opposition is weak, because people are really saying that they're very tired of the ruling party. There's a looming corruption, and people want really a change. But election will decide on that. But I wouldn't say that it'd be like an easy win for the ruling party.
Now, let me ask you about this, because I heard some political parties or independent candidates are taking advantage of support, financial support from the government. Sometimes they take the money and they run away without campaigning or contesting in the election. Talk to me about this phenomenon.
That's happened actually here in Mozambique too. There's a fourth candidate who is like Mario Albino from a coalition of parts called Amusi. This gentleman did not have a proper campaign. He just like went to the seat of Nampula and they basically stayed there and then started saying that there were like threats to his life, and he did not do a proper campaign. He just stayed there, and actually people say like jokingly that he is actually the winner because he got the funding from the government and he went somewhere just to spoil himself not running a campaign, which is very bad for African politics.
Now, talk to me about issues of violence, because some people are expressing concern that despite the agreement between Frelimo, the ruling party, and RENAMO, the main opposition party, a separate group has refused to acknowledge and threatened to attack during the election period. Talk to me about ways to try to curb or prevent any possible violence during and after the elections.
We did not hear the president, the incumbent president, saying any sound word in order to stop the violence. We have seen an independent electoral observer killed last week, an attempt and another opposition, and also many people died during this campaign. And also we have this former RENAMO fighters, they're like threatening to continue with the fight in some regions of Mozambique. So, like analysts say, again, it's like it's not a very safe process in terms of security for this election. And that will also probably influence many people not to go to the voting station in fear of violence. And despite the visit of the Pope, despite the peace agreement, Mozambique is not, at least at this time, at peace at all.
So talk to me about the issue of the cyclones hitting different parts of Mozambique, particularly in Beira, where you are. It affected it, you know, very hard, or it hit it very hard. Will the Electoral Commission be able to organize the election in some of these areas which were hit by the cyclones?
Well, in most of the areas hit by the cyclone, life went normal, although people still struggle to make ends meet. But in terms of election, and I've been to one of the areas today, it seems like that's not a major concern because they were able to take the exact numbers of people who'd be voting. And then this night, like tonight, they're transporting the bullets to the area. So there won't be perhaps the impact of the cyclone on this election because they were prepared well in advance. That's not a major concern at this time.
Amancio, briefly before we go, what is the next step forward after official campaigning ends Saturday in Mozambique ahead of next week's elections? What happens next?
What happens next, there's this thing people call here 2 days of reflection. Like you've been consuming a lot of this message, so it's up to the people to sit and reflect on whom to vote. During this period, it's forbidden by law to do any activities related to the campaign, to display posters, to play radio and TV adverts from any political party. So it's 2 days of reflection, and on October 15, Mozambique is heading up to voting.
Thank you very much. That's VOA's Portuguese to Africa reporter Amancio Villacolos. He joined us live from Beira. Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane has reshuffled his cabinet, this after complaints that some ministers have been too slow to ensure timely service delivery to citizens. It also came following reports of a split in the ruling party of Basotho Convention, ABC.
Critics say the prime minister is to blame for the confusion within the rank and file of the party. They accuse him of calling for unity in public but running a kitchen cabinet and alienating allies in the governing coalition. But Thabo Takwalekwala, spokesperson for the prime minister, tells me the allegations against Mr. Thabane are unfounded, adding that reports of confusion in the ruling party have no effect in the country's administration.
The prime minister reshuffled the cabinet because there is a need for effective service delivery. More than that, there were three ministries which were vacant following resignation of some ministers. So he felt that it was now high time that he filled those positions by appointing ministers to those ministries. But primarily the purpose of reshuffling is to ensure a smooth service delivery, because it is a fact that some Basotho have been complaining about service delivery, saying that some ministries were very slow to deliver services to the nation or to the members of the public.
Yeah, but we were also hearing about some reports that he is assuming the role of the Minister of Defense in another portfolio, although the Constitution provides for the Prime Minister to have the position of defense.
According to the Constitution of Lesotho, the Prime Minister is also the Minister of Defense and National Security. He only relinquished that position at the beginning of the term of this current government because he felt that he had a lot on his plate, and he felt that somebody should assist him in running defense and national security. Now, already we have a very large cabinet. There was no way the prime minister could appoint another minister to hold the position of defense and national security after he has removed the minister who held that position and shuffled him to the Ministry of Forestry. Now, to keep the cabinet in its current size, he felt that he should take the position of the Minister of Defense and National Security.
But some critics of the Prime Minister are saying he is to blame for appointing square pegs in round holes and that he should take the blame for it. How confident are you that the new people he has appointed to this new cabinet will be effective?
I think they will be very, very effective because they are quite aware of what is happening in the country. They are quite aware of the public outcry against inefficient service delivery and laxity on the part of some government officials to carry out duties that are intended to help people. So they are coming in quite fully aware of the situation. And normally what happens is that before he appoints any new minister, he calls them for a short meeting where he explains to that minister what he's supposed to do, why is he being appointed to the cabinet.
Well, what do you say to critics who are saying the prime minister is the cause of the instability of the ruling coalition and that the ABC, the ruling party, divisions within the party is the cause of the president, and that publicly he calls for unity but privately he's running a kitchen cabinet, and that he's not inclusive? That is why there's a push and pull and possible divisions within the ABC. Your response to that?
Allegations that there's instability within the ruling coalition unfounded, malicious, and baseless. There is no instability within the ruling coalition. The coalition is as solid as it could be. And the government is functioning normally. I'm saying this because the factions within the ABC have not affected the running of the country, the running of government in any way.
Tabo Takwalekwala is the spokesperson for the Lesotho Prime Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. Public sector workers say they would not be deterred in their determination to press home their demands for improved living condition in the southern African kingdom of Eswatini. The workers say the strike aims to pressure the administration to increase the salary of the workers. It follows a dispute with the government over a pay increase to cover the sharp rise in the cost of living. Sikelela Dlamini, the general secretary for the Swaziland National Association of Teachers, tells me representatives of the various workers group are meeting to plan the next nationwide strike to continue to demand for improved living conditions.
We really appreciate the condemnation by the comrades from other countries because we have always been complaining about our government, about our kings. Every time when we go on strike, when we have a public sensitization march, there's always those problems of brutality, police brutality, people being shot. One of those comrades that were shot last week Wednesday was not even part of the match, was just an ordinary town user, and she was shot with her hands up, surrendering. And yesterday, one of his fingers was permanently cut by the doctors to say she's not going to be having the fifth finger on her right hand. Speculation is such that the police were actually using maximum force, something that was not warranted at that stage.
With this violence that you said was meted out to you, is your organization or public sector workers in the kingdom of Eswatini planning to embark on yet another strike to press home your demands for improved living conditions?
Yes, if I can be honest, we have got no other alternative. We have been pushed into a tight corner by the government such that living is a clear impossibility. If I may tell you, 2019 is the third year since we last got a salary increment. And our salaries are now worse off by 19.9%, close to 20%. And now that government has interdicted our strike, unleashing brute force against the peaceful and striking workers, it gives us with no alternative but to pursue until our demands are met.
But yes. Are you not going to put your members' life in jeopardy since you said the police use excessive or maximum force to try to stop the protest?
As I'm talking to you, as the organizations, we are conducting consultative meetings countrywide. People are not only prepared to sustain injuries. They are prepared even to die if it calls for. Because if we can put it plainly, the lives that are living, that they are living currently, is very, very miserable. So people are in a tight corner. They do not want anything. They cannot engage a reverse gear now. But as an organization, we are going to ensure that we follow all legal provisions, laid down provisions, so that our next strike is a legitimate one, too, so that we cannot put our members at risk.
Some people are saying that you have not been negotiating with the government in good faith, and that the government tried to stop this protest because it is not in the kingdom's interest. How do you react to it?
That could be an incorrect narration, if I may say. In actual fact, what we can plainly put is that as unions, we have said that if the government is saying they are in cash liquidity problems as we speak and they cannot fund cost of living adjustment for workers, but we are saying, look, colleagues in government, can we then enter into an agreement that will say, yeah, look, I know I have to pay you so much. I do not have the cash now, but let us get into an agreement where I am going to stagger the payment. And the government is even failing to accept a suggestion to reduce the much high pay-as-you-earn tax.
But Dlamini, the government says it doesn't have money. However, there were reports of the king making some promise of some millions of dollars when he was out of the country. How are your members reacting to the news when it was broadcast in Eswatini?
I'm dumbfounded. We are very, very frustrated. We are confused. We are speechless. In actual fact, today is the talk of the country. It is unimaginable how the king and the government can say they do not have money on one hand, and yet you find that the king is spending so many millions of emalangeni. We are not saying money should not be spent, but there should be an understanding that priorities must be set, and there should be correct priorities for the country.
Sikelela Dlamini is the General Secretary for the Swaziland National Association of Teachers. He spoke with me from the capital in Mbabane. This week, Uganda announced plans for a bill that will impose the death penalty on homosexuals, saying the legislation would curb a rise in unnatural sex. Uganda's Ethics and Integrity Minister Simon Lokoto told local media on Thursday that the bill, which is supported by President Yoweri Museveni, will be reintroduced in Parliament in the coming weeks and is expected to be voted on before the end of the year. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached Charles Monguhia Mpaji, Bureau Chief for the East African, a major newspaper in the Ugandan capital Kampala, and began by asking him why reintroduce the bill now.
First, I think you have to appreciate that when the bill was initially passed, it was quite popular. Politicians from across political divide embraced it. And when it was defeated in court, it was only defeated on a technicality, not on its political merit or support. So the motivation to reintroduce it now ties in with in the critical election in 2021. So I think President Museveni and his NRM supporters think it is one of those laws that would rally the country then, especially with the bitter test of December 2017 passage of the amendment to the constitution that removed age limits for the presidency, which has hurt a lot of NRM supporters. And President Museveni, yes, he is a beneficiary of that law, but many people were not happy, especially with members of parliament who passed. So to try and remove that bitter taste in the mouth of many Ugandans, I think the timing of the Anti-Homosexuality Act might want to tie in with that, its reintroduction.
So it seems what you're saying is that it has high chances of passing in the parliament.
Yes, it's a highly emotive subject in this country because it is tied not on its human rights aspects, how it infringes on the human rights of sexual minorities, but rather taps into a very strong religious sentiment, a religious and conservative sentiment in this country.
What's the general feeling among the people? Are they supportive?
They would be supportive because its packaging and its presentation taps into those two critical elements. One, a generally conservative nature of majority of the population and a very highly religious appeal.
When this bill passed 5 years ago, there was a heavy backlash, especially among Uganda's donors in the West. How does the country intend to handle that backlash again? Because already there are outcries about this anticipated bill.
It's obviously not clear, because you remember when it was passed, President Museveni complained that he had been fielding phone calls from Toronto, from Washington, from St. Downing Street, and all over the world, from Western leaders. To tap into local political sentiment, that's exactly what it is used, that homosexuality is an alien foreign culture that is being pushed down the throats of Ugandans and African people by the West. Now, that is not entirely true, because homosexuality and homosexuals here haven't necessarily been, or gay people generally, haven't necessarily been mobilized or recruited by the West. But to make a political point, that makes a lot of sense, to pit the country as conservative with African values against the West that is promoting untoward behavior that is not natural or cultural here. Now, I think the calculation by the president is it makes a good political point by him and his supporters in the National Resistance Movement that this is the way that Africans are pushing back against the West. There is a possibility that he will want, if not even surpass, to keep in the good books of his Western backers, but for a domestic audience, it works very effectively for him, and even for people like MP Bahati.
Charles Mwangui Mpaji is the bureau chief for the East African, a major newspaper. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the defense lawyer for Tanzanian investigative reporter Eric Kabandera has signaled to a court plans to begin a plea bargain with the director of public prosecution. Jebra Kamboli says the move will enable Kabandera to be granted bail so he can return home to his family and take care of his health. But critics question why the journalist should plea bargain when he did nothing wrong. But Kabandera's defense lawyer tells me plea bargain is the best option available to expedite the process to enable his client to return home to his family.
Regard to the intention to enter in the plea agreement or plea of guilty agreement, actually, we have considered several factors before we decided to go to this way. We just consider the time he might spend in prison. We consider his health status. We consider the political situation and the circumstances in general. That's why we decided to go to this way, so that we can secure his release, early release. And actually, what we did is according to the law. According to our Criminal Procedure Act, CAP 20, revised edition 2002, which was amended through Act No. 4 for 2019, specifically Section 194, Capital A, Subsection 2, where it provides that if you have an intention to start a pre-agreement arrangement, you have to notify the court. So what we did today, we just notified the court that this is our intention to start the negotiation with the Director of Public Prosecution, but the intention is to secure the early release of Eric Kabandera.
Some people are of the view that why should you plea bargain since he has done nothing wrong, and that this move will further embolden the government to clamp down on journalists in the country. How do you respond to that?
We have taken that move by considering the fact that we have considered the wishes of the family, the wishes of Eric Kabandera himself, but also we've considered other factors before we go to that sphere. But what we decided is the trends show that most of people who are faced with such kind of offenses, first they fail to get bail because the offenses are unbailable. And the trends show that they spend more years. Some spend even 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. So instead of waiting for all those years, rather than go to this way, which actually the client needs, the public, the family needs. We find that the only solution which could make early release of Eric so that he can get the proper treatment, medication, and so on, is the only way is by entering on pre-agreement arrangement. But it depends on the terms which will be on the table and the condition which will be put by the Director of Public Prosecution. Then we'll update about the condition and the terms and condition which has been set out and what will be our response to those terms and condition.
So with the action that you are taking in consultation with your client, Eric Kabandera, what will he be pleading to?
Actually, he's not the only person who actually undergo the process of plea bargaining agreement. In Tanzania, it has been a public outcry and many of people are undergoing such a process. So what actually happened, it depends on the terms and the condition which will be put forward by the Director of Public Prosecution. But our interest is to make sure that we secure the plea deal, which will be in a proper terms and condition, which are favorable to Eric, and actually which are a best interest of Eric. It depends to the time and the amount which is supposed to pay, but actually we make sure that we enter the plea deal which is actually in favor of Eric and not any other person.
When do you plan on meeting the director of public prosecution? And so far, what has been some of the information you're getting from the office of the director of public prosecution about beginning this process of plea bargain?
We expect to start the meeting and negotiation by early next week, because once you notify the court, the second stage is to meet with the office of the director of public prosecution so that we begin the negotiation. So we expect early next week to begin the negotiation. And the case today was adjourned until 24th October 2019, but early can be released early once we finish this pre-bargaining arrangement agreement. He can be released even early, before 24th October 2019.
Jebra Kamboli is the defense lawyer for the Tanzanian investigative reporter Eric Kabandera. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Right now, it's time for music from African Collection. You're listening to Wendy Shea featuring Shatta Wale with Stevie Wonder. Willie Paul featuring Ray Vanny, followed with See Me and Praise Out of My Mind. Root Boy featuring Pato Ranke with Together. Rhoda K with Inquetega. And then Kofi Olumide featuring Papa Wemba. Finish off with Musukusuku.
kushusha kitunguu ndo radha ya mtoli ama nyama nyama kwenye sambusa kichuguni mzigo na toroli hadi nguo inataka pasuka msupu mwenye macho ya goroli rangi kama unaoga mafuta oh my my
baby, when will you be gone? Why you did my head for so long?
Sudden, my body they do me. I love you. Seriously intimidating, my body calibrating.
I need you.
Even when you're wrong or right, I cannot be satisfied. I just wanna hold you tight and feel alright. Girl, I no regret. Even though every day we dey fight, girl, I still adore you. I still adore you. I appreciate. Since I set my eyes on you, yeah, you knock me out. You freak me out, then you knock me out. Whenever, however, anyhow way you like me, give me, we gon' stay together forever. I know this when I'm free, anytime, whenever, however, anyhow way you like me, give me, we gon' stay together forever. Stay together, fight together.
Don't let me realize it. God bless you specially for me, but you be.
Mr. Beats on
on the beat. Your love is a bomb. You make me surrender. Won't put in panic. So tell me tonight. What's on your soul, mutima? Don't tell me about it. I call you my baby. Kulinda tenobula ina di dance surface. You're my everything, everything. Come so bude we chilo ombera tight. Kwetaga, 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 kwetaga. Yekwe permanent switch and take a nobula mu. Kwetaga, yekwe ndogo tanya osusa ngomula. Omkwano kusi wangebwa, baby, rachineda. Wewe kanjagala kuona, woto banze tebinyumira. Back it up, killa dem the rhythm. Let's play this song, na copycat. I a bass, man dem wanna get a piece of me, Bambi lawyer. Member, omeze na malala, onjogeza kwa musama. Eyalithin na bangeze na matama, baby, meze na malala. In a dance surface, you're my everything, everything. Come so good, we chill on bed and tight. Kwetaga, 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 kwetaga. Yeah, we permanent switch and take a global amu. Kwetaga, yeah, we ndo go tanya osu sango mulalu. Your love is a bomb. You make me surrender, won't put in panic. So tell me tonight. What's on your soul, mutima? Don't tell me about it. I call you my baby. Oh, see me, my soul. I can see all these other guys. Night and day, baby, toluwa. Zem kulinda tenobula. In a dance surface, you're my everything, everything. Come so good, we chill on bed and tight. Kwetaga.
Suka suka konsuma sema bile. Kwa mela tizana mwebele ilo
Bapeti ya Kimpwanza, Bashenge na Hokwe Mandela.
Bayaya, 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 bayaya. Songanzile,
songanzile mwana.
Abeni ko zero fote.
Songanzile yaya.
Mokolo kolo na ikumani.
Songanzile tata.
Tofungola mite manzambe ya kota.
Songanzile kiare.
Ahmed Bakayoko, les demi-dieux.
Alléluia.
In service express.
Music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, prepare now for the solutions of tomorrow. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.